Welcome to the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight, the podcast where we uncover the secrets of CEOs, entrepreneurs, and visionaries who've used public speaking to skyrocket their businesses and their bottom line. Get ready for captivating stories, valuable insights, and practical wisdom from the trailblazers who've mastered the art of the stage. I'm your host, Kelly O'Hara, and I'm thrilled to bring you their experiences and expertise directly to you. Let's get started. You're listening to the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight, the show that cuts through the fluff and gets real about what it takes to use your voice to build serious income and real influence. I'm Kelly O'Hara, and each week I sit down with speakers, entrepreneurs, and experts who know how to turn a single message into a movement and a paycheck. If you've ever wondered how the pros use a stage to drive results, not just applause, you're in the right place. And speaking of pros, today's guest is the definition of built, not born. Marianne Hickman is an international public speaker, mentor, and the powerhouse behind This Is Me, LLC. She's taken the stage over 2,500 times in 17 countries, and every time she steps up to the mic, it's with one goal: to help good people get crazy wealthy by monetizing their message. Her story, let's just say it doesn't start in the boardroom. Marianne was a single mom who pulled her family off food stamps and built a multi-million dollar real estate portfolio while raising six kids, and by teaching them how to craft keynotes that actually convert, land repeat bookings, and deepen relationships, all from the stage. Today, we're getting into real strategies that move the needle, like how to build a call to action that doesn't push people away, but pulls them in, how to stop leaving the money on the table when you speak, and how your next keynote could be the thing that opens the floodgates for your business. Oh, and don't leave without grabbing her free gift on building your signature keynote at mariannehickman.com/free gift. We'll talk about this again. You're going to want this. This is one of those conversations that could flip a switch in your business. And once it flips, there's no going back. So let's get into it. Meet Marianne Hickman.
Hey, everyone. Kelly, thank you so much. I just love the little green room that we get beforehand and we get to know each other. And you and I just clicked like we'd been best friends for 10 years.
Just like that. It felt like this is just another day for us hanging over the back fence. I just loved it. So if you watch this show, and all my people that tune back in again know that I love the journey. I think there's so much value in it. We know as storytellers that your hero's journey counts, but it's really about connecting the dots from how people come from one position in life or in one situation, and what are the things that led them into the expertise that they now come and bring you. So we got to rewind the clock before stages and strategy and how six kids. I keep going back to that. You're amazing. Who was Marianne Hickman, and what were the sparks that hinted that you were meant for something even bigger?
I love going back in time and looking at this, because I was invisible as a child. I was the last in a train of 10 kids. And when you do that in a small town outside Denver, Colorado, a little town called Wheat Ridge, our high school mascot was the farmer. That's how small town we were. It was once a farmer, I was a farmer, right? We went through school, and there was a teacher, Mrs. Bloomer, that had all 10 of us. She started at my oldest brother and then got all the way down. And so she had seen us all go through. And I was always that kid's little sister. I was Steve's little sister, or Susan's little sister, or Ruth's little sister. I began to wonder if people even knew my name, because I was just the littlest sister, the end of the train that followed me into junior high. It followed me into high school. And I didn't really feel like I had the voice. In fact, my mom's journals from when I was about 4 years old, God bless that woman for writing so much. She wrote down one day, and I remember the feeling, although I don't remember the day or the circumstance. She said, my four-year-old daughter, Marianne, came up to me and said, when do I get to be the boss? And I told her never, which as a mom, I get it. Four-year-olds cannot be trusted to be bosses. They're terrible at things. They're emotional and a train wreck. But I felt that when I was four, about not being heard and not having any say and not having my voice mean anything and not have it matter and not having my opinion be part of any decision-making process whatsoever. And so I think subconsciously that followed me for a long time up until adulthood, where I'm not following behind siblings through school anymore. Nobody knows who my siblings are now. And that's okay. They're amazing people and they're worth following. I will say that. I love them. But no one wants to be a different person. Everyone wants to be the best version of themselves, even if we venerate people or look up to people. We're only venerating them or looking up to them because we admire that they have become the best version of them. And that's what we want for ourselves, right? We want to explode in authenticity and power, but man, that's easy to say, but hard to do. So I grew up in a space where I didn't feel, through no fault of anybody else's, I didn't feel that my voice meant anything. It just didn't matter.
Wow, being at the tail end, I can see that. It also calls to mind, my mother had three daughters, and I can remember calling all of our names in trying to call one of them. She had to call all three because she couldn't remember them. It was almost like, Kelly, Ashley, Kevin. She would just call out, that was your name, whatever it was, and whoever's the last person. I can't imagine your mother remembering to call out perfectly the 10th person.
Oh, we would just do numbers. She would yell count off and we would say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 and just make sure everyone had to call out their own number.
Wow.
And do roll call. That's how, before we left for church, before we left for anything, count off. That's what we did.
These are amazing. That's an amazing family to be brought up in. Lots of love and connection and everything else, but trying to find your individuality. Like you said, finding someone to listen to your voice when you're the one usually probably getting taken care of and told what to do and directed. That's a big challenge. So what's the specific shift or experience that said, yeah, I got to change this up and this is how I'm going to do it? What was the first move?
I can remember chronologically, the first move was in Mrs. Wilson's 7th grade class. And I don't know if she's still around. And Mrs. Wilson, if you're here, I just have to know how many times I've spoken about you with gratitude on podcasts and stages and shows, because this woman, and it's often our parents love us and support us, and mine were very good at that. But I, even as a parent, I want other adults to see the greatness of my kids, because we take it for granted, our parents seeing something in us, because ostensibly they're supposed to, right? And as a parent, I love it when someone else sees something special in my child, because I know my child needs a second witness. Outside, yeah. Someone without a right. Mrs. Wilson was that for me. And she was my 7th grade English teacher. And I remember the day that she called me a scholar. And she said, I get goosebumps. My 7th grade self is so excited right now. She only gave that name to one or two students a year. And I was one of the students who she didn't make a big show of it, but she wrote it in my student review. She said, Marianne is a scholar. And I felt so proud of myself. And she saw something in me and she pulled me aside and she says, I want you to compete in this speech competition. And in my head, I'm like, speech competition? That just sounds like an argument. Is this an argument? Is that what we're doing? What is this? And there was an optimist speech club. It's kind of like the Kiwanis club, and they're still around. They still do competitions, but it was for students. And she had me enroll. I wrote a speech for it. And it's just very generic. Title, Optimism in My Life, right? So I go to this contest and I'm sitting there and I'm watching these other students. Some of them are my friends. Some of them are people that I've never met. And I'm watching them compete. And I remember sitting there observing the speakers and not feeling moved. You know, when you're sitting and listening to a speaker and they're like robotic and it's a recitation and they did a good job memorizing, but not connecting. And then I got up and delivered my speech. And I remember looking at people in the audience and making eye contact and doing just the things that I had been taught to do since I started speaking at church in 3 years old, the 2-minute little primary thing that we used to do. And I sat there during the award ceremony with this sparkly, excited feeling in my heart that I had won. And without any ego, I was just so grateful that my name was called for first place. So then I went on to regionals and the same thing happened. And with all the other locals competing at regionals, one first place, and now we got to go to state. And I will always apologize to my sister. I missed her wedding because I wanted to compete in the state competition. Oh, I'm sorry, Susan. So I went and competed at state, and I wasn't grateful then, but I'm so grateful now that I lost, because I got to see speakers who were incredible. I got to learn something. being the best in class didn't teach me anything. I didn't get to learn from speakers that were better than me. I didn't get to learn from facilitators who were better than me. And when I lost, I felt sad. I was let down. Oh, I lost the competition. But I remember watching the girl who would win. She got up there, no notes, no memorization, no robotic voice. What, seventh grade? So that makes us 12 years old.
Oh, amazing.
Right? Here's my goosebumps again. My seventh grade self is still remembering the impact and the influence before influencer was a job description. The power of that 12-year-old girl's speech hit me. And I knew sitting there, I'm like, that's the winner. She won. I can tell.
You just know, don't you? Like, before it ever gets announced, you go, that's the one. That's the one that moved me. Yeah. And I love your perspective. It's funny. It brought up something for me, too, is as you were saying that, is that you might have it in your mind that someone else is, they're supposed to be so great and you have to follow them. I hadn't experienced that as an industry speaker. And I found out where I was going to be in the lineup. And I was absolutely terrified of making this talk because I was in front of all these industry leaders and it was a global event. And I'd really been sweating bullets about preparing for it. And then I found out I was going to be behind the absolute industry leader attorney who everybody, they had decision-making power on how things were going to go. So everybody was going to be riveted by this speech. And I thought, oh my gosh, I got to follow this guy. Yeah. This influential guy. I was really freaking out. And then I sat through the talk. Okay.
Oh, that said so much.
Okay. And when it was over, I thought, I'll be fine. I'll figure this out. But it was that shifting of what you think is going to happen and who's ahead of you or whatever. But that was confidence building in, okay, maybe it's not. Maybe it's not all this. I'll be okay. And it turned out okay.
Yeah.
But it was a good perspective shift. Don't be assuming. What other people do is what they do. But be careful that you do not assume what is not actually happening or what isn't true. So I love it. And I love that you had someone that was such a great mentor for you, your sixth grade teacher. Look at that. As a teacher, how right. powerful that is for her to know she moved the needle for you.
Oh, she really did. That's She's amazing. The one. It's the one that first believes in you. It's the one that first, she invested. She also, she saw me. And
she
I went to
you.
Europe with her. She took me to Paris with a group of like 20 other kids. And just, I have so much gratitude. I need to find her and just tell her thank you because I have so much gratitude. I maybe through the power of social media, I can find her again. But man, what an incredible woman.
I love that. I love that. And clearly, one thing I will ask you is prior to this, as you're coming up, did you may not have thought you had a voice, but did you feel comfortable in your skin? Did you have fear speaking or were you just naturally comfortable in front of an audience?
I don't know if it came because I was just surrounded by people so much. I can't recall entertaining any fears of public speaking until I was a grown-up and I must have picked it up along the way. Because I think as kids are pretty fearless. They're born without any fears, arguably. And we learn these fears. We pick them up because we observe other people's fears as we go along. And it's crazy because sometimes we pick up fears because they're trendy. We pick up fears because someone says a size comment. Your mom says, oh, she's shy. And you're like, oh, okay. I guess I'm a shy person. What does that mean? How does a shy person show up? How do I make sure I do this right? And we pick these up. And the time where I felt the most fear was when I was probably 6 years ago, maybe seven. I was asked to MC an event, which was normal. It's very common for me to do. That was an event I had MC'd before with speakers I knew very well. And this fear only lasted a moment, but it was a fear of letting the host down and letting the audience down. Because what happened was I was supposed to bring on the next speaker. Our last speaker ended a little early. And as the MC, you got to be on point. You got to be the glue. You have to be watching the stage because the worst thing that can happen is an empty stage, right? So the last person ends a little early. The stage manager gives me a call. I come running. I'm tucking my shirt in because I had to go pee real quick and I got to get up to the stage and I'm putting my cheek mic on. And they're like dustling my hair and doing the, you feel like such a hot shot when everyone's doing your hair and your makeup for you. And then you get up on stage and I have seconds left and I get up there and I take this speaker off and I'm getting ready to cue up the next speaker. So typically the MC moments are like, what, 5, 10 minutes maybe, just to get them mic'd up and so forth. 5, 10 minutes pass and my confidence monitor says that they're not ready. But okay, we can stretch this out a little bit longer. But the moment you say stretch this out a little bit longer, now we're thinking internally. And that's where the fear kicked in. Now we're thinking selfishly. Now we're thinking, how do I do this? What do I do? What if I mess up? And that's when stage fright comes in, is when we're speaking selfishly. How do I honor the host in a way that they want me to come back? When I should have been thinking, what does the audience need? What can I do for them? How will they benefit from me up here? And someone once told me, when you're speaking on stage, when you have the microphone, it's a sacred space because it's the only time you can multiply time. And here's what I mean by that. If we are doing this podcast episode and we have 100 people listening to 60 seconds of it, that's 100 times 60 seconds. That's 100 minutes of time. And when we're in a room with 20 people or 700 people, it doesn't matter the number, you're multiplying time because you're being given the most valuable gift of all, which is the attention and time of other people.
Absolutely.
And so when I got on that stage and I had that fear for a moment, I tied my stomach in a knot and I checked myself. I realized what I was doing. And I said, how can I serve? How can I serve? It turned out I was on that stage for 3 hours. I think the next facilitator fell asleep under the table in the back or something. I don't know where they were. Maybe they left. I don't even know. But 3 hours later, the audience and I, we were on a roll. We were still talking. We were still growing. We were still pouring into each other and sharing this flame that doesn't diminish the more you share it. And it was electrifying to be the one with humble gratitude to share that experience with that many people, and everyone felt elevated at the end. It didn't come at a cost. It came growing together, and that was beautiful.
That sounds like a pivotal moment and the one that's meant to be, because it brought that lesson. I tell people getting on the stage, listen, you think it's you, but in the end, it's not about you. Mm-hmm. It's about the audience. It's about what you bring to the audience, and whether you bring it to all of them or to the one person who needed to hear what you had to say, you're there on the giving side. And if you can get the attention off yourself, it really takes the heat out. But what an opportunity for you, because I love hosting shows. This is a joy I have. I don't know, somewhere innately, I like taking care of people. We had a talk before this show. I said, 6 kids. I used to say I would have 6 kids if I didn't have to feed them, because I don't like to be in the kitchen. I don't like to cook. So she's already a rock star in my mind. And I'm
amazed. Oh, Kelly, you're too nice.
But truly, what a great opportunity to find out what a leader and what a facilitator you are. What a great facilitator you are when you can take over a spot that was meant to be a few minutes and run it for 3 hours and be on fire where everybody's connected. And thank goodness that other person just didn't show, flaked out, whatever. It wasn't their day, but it was yours.
It was such an honor, and I'm grateful for it. And it's been, I did this experiment with God a little while ago that is still ongoing. And it's one of those experiments that's okay. We were also talking about the reason that we do podcasts is to show up and to serve and all of this, but how do we know we're doing it right? How do we know we're on point? And how do we know we're not getting distracted with ego or follower count or numbers or views or whatever it is? I did this experiment that I didn't tell anybody about while I was doing it, because it would have ruined it, because nobody can know. And this experiment was, I sat down with God, and I've had so many conversations with God. He's sitting in my passenger seat of my car all the time. And so I said, I want to know if I'm really making a difference. I want to know if I'm exerting a positive influence on the world. I want to know if when I speak, not people hear me, because that really doesn't matter anymore, but they're better because I was a conduit for something good for them. I just need to know if I'm doing that, because that's what I really want to be doing. So God, here's the experiment. For the next 30 days, we're going to keep track together, and I'm going to count every time someone gives me a piece of feedback that I didn't ask for. Because if you ask for it, that would ruin the experiment, right? I need to know if what I said mattered to them and helped them along the way. There's a song that we sing in our church called Have I Done Any Good in the World Today? And I just wanted to know if I had. And so I had to say, okay, it's either going to come in a text or a written note, or someone's going to take time to pull aside and step into my office and say, hey, thank you. This really made a difference. And I'm just going to count how many times that happens. And when I got to the end of the experiment, it was 38 times in a span of 30 days that someone took the time to say, your message mattered. And that's all I needed. That's all I needed to have
so
evidence.
Amazing. I love that. And you and I have a lot in common. I too sit in the car. There's a lot of prayer in the car. I don't know what it is, that closed in space, but I do a lot of conversations with God specifically in the car.
Uh-huh.
Or on my back patio. I don't know what it is being outside.
Me too.
Those two places are great for prayer. And if you're asking for the answers, if you're putting it out, a lot of people are praying for stuff. But when you pray for it, the trick to this is wait, listen for the answer. A lot of times you're in so much mode asking for what you want, but it's that trade-off too of that, here's what I have to offer. Show me a sign. Show me I'm on the right path. And honestly, the feedback you get is so powerful. I love that you did that. I'll bet you there's people listening that want to give that a try. And I think it will. You
I
get
hope
validated.
So. Yeah, I hope people that, and my goal is to put a megaphone up to the people whose message I can get behind. I can't get behind everybody's message. My first marriage was destroyed by pornography. So I can't get behind the people that promote that. I just won't. I'm not going to, you know, everyone has the power to free speech. We have all that. I'm not trying to say anything about that. Everyone has the ability to talk. I'm not going to take that away, but I'm not going to put my megaphone up to those people's mouths. I'm going to put them up to the people's mouths I can get behind, right?
Yep.
And if you're listening to this and you're like, give me, just help me see, ask specifically how that should happen. I said, okay, I know I'm going to get it because it's going to be a written note or a text or this. So give criteria that you can recognize. And for me, sometimes it's even a little bit sign. I made a symbol up. I made a little totem up for myself. And I said, anytime I see a single feather, that's an indicator to me that I'm going in the right direction. I totally stole it from Forrest Gump. Thank you, Tom Hanks. But that's another indicator to me. So do this for yourself. Give yourself a little radar to put out there to help you see the evidence of the good that you're doing, because it'll make you want to do way more.
Yeah, that's the absolute fact. I love that you share that, because I think a lot of times, like I said, people are missing the answer. And what you're also missing is the magic of how things get delivered to you that you've requested. I find most of the time it doesn't come in the way that you expected. It comes from the most unusual place, or it comes from someone you had no expectation, or you haven't seen in a long time. Someone will say something to you that's exactly the thing you needed to hear, or the thing you needed to make the next move, or the introduction that you got that's completely out of left field. I think people are, a lot of times, they're missing the joy, the magic of life. When you put it out there, you ask for it, you have an expectation, this is going to work out for me. Mm-hmm. And then you sit back and watch how it shows up. Nothing can make you feel more connected. It just is such connective tissue.
It is. And it's back to your point about parenthood and conversations and waiting for the answer. I know when my kids ask me for something, and then they just walk off. And I was like, I was about to tell you how to get it, but you walked away. I was going to talk, but that's fine. That's the same thing if you hang up the phone on prayer and you're like, amen, done. I'm not listening. Bring me whatever I want. There, chances are you're going to get a response that likely will surprise you, but you're going to get a response and comfort and a how-to guide. And most often a challenge has been my experience, because we can't get new stuff if we keep doing old stuff. That's been so powerful for me, is to do exactly what you said, is listen. And I even write down the answers I get sometimes. I have a little journal called Letters from God. And I write after I pray and I just listen. And I'm like, okay, what's the message today? And it's like personal scripture. It's really cool.
It's fabulous. And in another bent, they call that automatic writing. I have found that is so successful.
Wait, that's a thing? I thought I made it up.
No, you didn't.
Oh,
it's actually out there a long time. In fact, there's a group of books that was written by Neil Donald Walsh. They came at exactly the right time, called Conversations with God. Fascinating book. But honestly, I remember that this book kept showing up in front of me. And I got to tell you, at the time, I was going through a very rough time. I was going through was really having a hard time. This book showed up every place. It was at Costco. It'd be sitting on the rack. It kept showing up, and I kept going, yeah, I have no interest in that. Zero. Don't want to hear any Holy Roller books at the time. I wasn't. I was really, really just on a very challenging track. That my son was really sick. There was a lot of things going on. And I remember that I was not on my knees. And I'll tell you what, this book kept showing up. And finally, it was on the checkout stand right as you were leaving a Walmart. I think it was Walmart that I was in. And I remember grabbing it going, what do you want? This? Why I was so angry at this book, I have no idea. I think it's just God on it. I was so angry at the time going, what is it that this thing is everywhere I look? So I took it home. And the very beginning of it is reasonable to share here is that it's a letter that this guy whose life was just kept tanking over and over again. It just kept screwing up. He just kept losing. And finally he wrote this nasty letter to God, just going, I'm sick of this. I'm sick that nothing works out for me. I'm tired of always being on the short end. I'm tired of losing everything. And he writes this whole thing. And then he said, my hand hovered on the page. And the next line was, do you want answers or do you need to keep venting? And that began this long conversation that turned into several books, but it was so direct. It was so bold. It was, I want to know why this works. I want to know why this isn't working. I want to know what, and I thought that really sent me on an interesting journey of, okay, so I tried it. It actually works. So it really is right in line with your talking about is that have the conversation. If you need to write it, if you need to journal it, the magic of journaling is you get to look at it 3 years from now, 5 years from now, and go, oh my gosh, that actually happened. I remember when I felt like this and this showed up, and you will be amazed at the things that show up in your life. They were what you asked for. They just showed up in a different way.
Oh, that's the coolest feeling. And I've done that. I remember I wrote one time a financial wish list, you know, of what would I do if I had a windfall of $6 million. And I've done little challenges like that. I'm currently in another one right now. If you have to spend $10,000 a day and you can't pay off your mortgage, you can't pay off your student loans, you have to just spend it, right? Anyway, so I was in this experiment and I wrote down all the things that I wanted. And I was like, I want enough for a math tutor for my daughter. And I want enough to have that washer and dryer that I really want. And I want to have to do this. And I had a list of some of them a little bit loftier than a washer and dryer, this checklist of goals. And I was reviewing this exercise with some of my employees at the time. And I went back to my old notebook to pick it up. It'd been 4 years. And I was just trying to show them the worksheet. Here's the template. Fill this out. And I looked at it and I was like, oh my gosh.
You have all of it.
All of it.
All
Every
of it.
Single thing. I was like, you've got to be kidding me. We just signed up my daughter for math tutoring last week. Are you kidding me?
It's shocking. And you're to the people listening, if you want to try something, give this experiment a try because you'll be blown away. I started using this tactic for where I was having a struggle. Like I was trying to buy a house, but I was working 80 hours a week. When did look at it? And it was a hot market and 11 deals fell out because I was letting a realtor do it for me. And finally I went, you're fired. I'll buy the house myself. I'll figure it out. And this is what I want the house to feel like. This is what it feels like. These are the elements it has to have. It has to do this and this. I want it to do this. I made out 4 pages, handed it to my husband and said, listen, do you agree with all this? How do you feel about it? Add whatever you want. And he said, yeah, this is fine. I need fruit trees in a corner house. And I went, what? You have just limited my wish list down to how many houses are the corner house? And you want fruit trees. And I was like, I need palm trees. I'm a Southern California girl. Guess what? In the end, corner house by accident. Didn't go looking for the corner house. Drove one by accident, a peninsula lot in the middle of this, right outside a forest. Would never have known about the forest. It was just totally by fluke I got there. Literally, there's 40 trees on this property.
Oh
but
my gosh.
There are 10 fruit trees and 8 palm trees to start with. And I went, and it was a corner lot. And I went, I just have to laugh. I just have to giggle. That's how it came up. So I did the same thing with a spouse. The second time around, I went, I'm not going to fool around here. Here's my list of 4 things. And these are the top 10. And these are the top three non-negotiables. And everything on the list showed up. Every single thing I got.
I did the same thing when I got remarried. The same thing. I made the list and I got narrow on it. And I made a CRM of the people I was dating. I kid you not. I pushed them down the pipeline. I was like, oh, that one follow up. Nope. That one's not. Nope. That one's lost. Close lost. Do you think that God, whoever people see him or her or the parents or whoever, whatever, do you think that they just sit there with this gift that's wrapped like we do at Christmas time when we can't wait to see our kids unwrap that perfect present that we got them, knowing they're going to love it? I got my husband I can't remember the name of the gun now. It was a gun that from his favorite Stargate show that he loved so much. And I couldn't wait for him to open it because it was exactly the thing that he wanted. And I knew he was going to love it. And I think about in terms of our God and who loves us the most perfect way possible. It's got to be like that. Do you think that I've got this gift for Kelly. She's going to love it. I can't wait for her to open it. She's just going to be so excited. And do you think that happens?
I do. And I think along with that comes the thought of, are you getting it? Are you getting it? You can create anything. I'm the creator. So are you. I gave you this opportunity. Use it to its fullest and use it well. Because so far, you're creating some things that don't really serve you. I think that's, and I think we do that. I do feel, I think everything that happens is happening for you. Even when it seems horrible on the forefront, most of the time, there's the gift you needed to get to the next spot. So whether it's poverty or illness or all of that seems so horrendous, it's so terrible, but it's really about, what are you going to do with this experience and how can you turn this around? And most of the time, I think you can. I think I've not had one of some horrendous things that have happened to me in my life. Honestly, every time I wouldn't take back any of them. Each one gave me a different perspective or a lesson I needed or a strength I didn't have before. And I just welcome all of that. I'm like, okay, bring it. I got you. Like, I got this. I'm going to give it a shot. And so
That went through my mind Saturday morning. So today's Tuesday. So it's been just a couple of days. Saturday morning, I'm on my way to the market with my daughter. She runs a little booth. She sells crochet animals. She's so good at it. I love it. We're on our way there and I'm sitting there at a red light talking to her and everything's fine. Everything's chill. And then I hear this bang. I look over at the side of the intersection. Two cars have T-boned each other and they're coming our way. And it's like slow-mo. In my brain, I remember thinking, aren't they going to stop? They should put on the brakes right now. Oh my gosh, they're not stopping. And boom, they run into us. My daughter's there. She's about to get her learner's permit. So instantly I'm like, this is going to be very, very educational. And I check in with her. Hey, you okay? Yeah, I'm fine. Okay, here's the next step. We're going to call 911. They're going to come. They're going to send the police officers, the sirens. The guy behind me was a stud. He got out of his truck and checked on everybody and made sure they were okay. The police and ambulance came. We got to see the jaws of life at work, open up the hood and all the cars get towed away. The whole thing, the whole shebang. And at the end of it, I always like to get feedback from my daughter whenever I have a response or reaction. And I'm like, how did I do as a mom? How did I do as a mom? Did I overreact? Did I underreact? I was impressed. I thought you'd be freaking out because you lost it when all your chickens got killed. You absolutely screamed and hollered. And I was like, okay. But in my head, I'm thinking the whole time, all right, God, I recognize this. I know what this is. I asked for something and this is the wrapping paper. I don't know what's inside yet. I'm still looking at the wrapping paper. It's pretty hideous, but I know you well enough to know that this is for me. I know what's going on here. I have yet to discover what that is. I don't know what it is yet. We're still in the middle of insurance and chiropractors and all this fun stuff. It's been 4 days, but I will be forever grateful for all of the people who trained me to think in the way of how is this a gift and to collapse the time that could be spent in trauma response, that could be spent in, oh, this is so awful, that could be spent in blah, 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 and ask the question as close to the incident as possible and say, how is this a gift?
How do you know this gift wasn't for you? How do you know this gift was for your daughter so she could see how you handle a crisis and you handle a trauma? How do you know that this wasn't the gift she needed to never get in the car with somebody who's drinking? Or to be on the lookout a whole lot better when she drives because she saw how fast an accident happens when you're in the right. There are so many beautiful lessons in this, but how you stayed calm, how you handled it, how you mothered her, how everybody did the right thing, how people dealt with the police. There are so many gifts in this. It's ridiculous. And you don't know the one that will be over time. There's another thing I got to ask you, and this is not expected, but that's what I love about these conversations. Having been through in the past 3 years, two crises of a fall, two falls that I had, you said something that I just have to ask you about, because the same thing happened to me. It was where time was suspended in such a noticeable way that you had that conversation. I had that twice. Once I was on an electric bike and I just hit the, I was coming between two poles and I hit one pole,
ugh,
maybe an inch and a half off. And I felt the go over, like I felt it. And I remember thinking, oh, this is a bit. And I remember thinking, how many seconds did that take me? And I had that conversation, and I had a terrible one in an airport where I got to the top of the escalator. And I had a huge bag, like it was way too heavy for me. It was a rolling bag, and I had that on it. And on top of it, I had my purse, and I was holding them both behind me. And I felt the shift, and I knew it was going down, and I didn't let it go because my purse was on it. And I remember going, this is a mistake. And it was like time was suspended. How did I have that conversation before I went all the way down to the bottom, got to the bottom, and remembered to hold my head up so that it wouldn't pull my hair in the escalator?
Ooh.
Is this? I looked like I'd been, what did I say? I'd been through this car accident. All three limbs were bloody every place.
Oh my God.
People sewing me up in the plane. But that's not the point. What I remember is, what was that time suspension where you had that conversation where time stood still? What is that about?
I've wondered about that because I used to pray for expansion of time. Like in my morning prayers, I would say, please God, I'm having such a good day today. Can you just make minutes longer for me? Please, I have to go to work tonight and I didn't enjoy my job. Can you expand my morning and collapse my afternoon for me, please, so that I experience more joy in the day? And I don't know that I have the answer. I don't know enough about the laws of physics and theories, and I'm a pilot by hobby. And so what I've always found fascinating is that time doesn't exist in the air. It is like when you're flying in between time zones, minutes pass, but you don't know what time it is, right?
Wow.
And so I'm sure some physicist or some biologist could help me unravel how thoughts passing in our brain can cause the perception of expansion or magnification of time or the collapsing of time or whatever it is. But back to the conversation of it being a gift, it's got to be that. It's got to be the ability to think so quickly, like the flash, where time just pauses for a second so that we can be given the gift of processing what's going on, to make decisions in that short amount of time, even if they're the wrong ones, like holding on to the bag or whatever the case may be. But I think about that a lot, especially in those back porch moments. Those back porch moments are so sacred to me.
They are so sacred. That's a perfect way to describe it.
You probably do the same thing I do, where you get up before anybody else does and you
absolutely
grab your coffee and you go to the back porch to see if you can catch the sunrise and the beautiful colors that were just painted just for you, and the sun so reliably rising and shining upon you every day. Like that.
Before the world is awake and you really have a direct pipeline and it just centers everything for you. It's like before the world wakes up, you have an opportunity to connect in a way that you just, for some reason, can't do at the end of the day. You can't do it as successfully at 5 o'clock when everybody's hungry and you know me and they want to eat. I'm just marry men that like to cook because I don't want to cook. But honestly, I just look at that. I think that's such a magical time. And I used to be a vampire. I used to be the one who was up late at night and 2 o'clock in the morning. And now, forget about it. If you're not in bed by 10, 30, 11, you miss that circadian rhythm thing. Apparently, there's a lot to it. But morning hours are magical. And they're
they really are. And they are. They're a gift for the individual. And it's this, that's a perfect time for a conversation with God. It's a perfect time to get clear on your message and or your his message for you. Thought about that. I think about God and parenthood a lot. And I didn't know we were going to go here today, but I'm really glad we did.
Me neither. You know? Of a great conversation is finding connection point where there's the aha, oh, you too? That is what changed it for me. And I think people enjoy hearing that because I think it's true for them as well. I think the ones that stay will say, I get it. That's happened to me before too. Or I want to know more about that. You're living in the most interesting of times. And no matter where you are politically or what's going on in your life, the one thing you aren't is bored. Not a boring moment going on. And there's so much discovery going on. I was thinking about this, just even the thought that we are talking about suspension of time and your desire to extend certain points in time. And now you're talking, I never paid attention to 0 point gravity. I knew nothing about it, but wait a minute. Now you're talking about it, that in between all of the matter that's out there, and you think it was, we've been told forever, it's blank space, that there's nothing in it, only to find out there is so much activity in it. How do we access that to build out even more the experience we want to have at this particular time? It's just incredible what we have access to.
Oh, yeah. And I always think of it as, like, there's I don't know if it's a metaphor or just a story or a parable, but there was this guy that went for a walk in the desert, right? And he finds this little oasis, and as he gets closer, he realizes it's more than just a little oasis. Someone has built a pool with the palm trees and the flowering plants, and it doesn't make sense because it's the middle of the sand dunes. And there's this cute little cottage with this iron gate with ivy crawling up it. Nothing makes sense in this little space, but the oasis is there, and he has to know. He's walking in, and he goes up to the gate, and he knocks on the front door, and he said, where did this come from? How did you build this? And the man said something super interesting. He said, I built this. And God didn't put this here. The man says, no, God put the materials, but look what I did with it. And that's what we've been given, is we've been given all these raw materials, not in terms of just substance around the things we can touch around us, but our experiences. And when we bring it back to speaking, I can't think of a better segue. We all have been given these experiences, these car accidents, these divorces, this tragic loss that we've been through. We've been through high points too, where we stand on the top of Machu Picchu with the butterflies licking the sweat off our bodies, and it's beautiful and amazing. And we've been given all of this raw material and raw matter. And when we organize what God has given us in terms of experience in our life, what we can create in terms of sharing our story with the audience, and nobody cares about our story. They don't. They only care how our story can change their story. And when we can change their story, that's the magic.
Well, it's the touch point, because the storytelling is so essential, because that's how our cultures were built. That's how we remember our history. That's how we get the lessons from the history. If we're not listening, you're starting over every time. It makes you stupid, because honestly,
it's
we
true.
Don't need to reinvent the wheel. Wheel's been made. Pay attention to how the wheel's been made. Now create something out of that. Go from there. We don't have to scratch again, hopefully.
Yeah, so, yeah.
It's not boring. It's not a boring life. I love this. Okay, I know I have to take you. I knew this wouldn't be long enough. If you look at this, everybody out there, I want you to know, I always talk to my guests. I always want them to create enough time. Marianne was great. She left a lot of time, but you can see, look where we are. I have 8 minutes left, and that's not going to work. So what we're going to do is we're going to call this part one.
Did we get to do more?
Absolutely.
We need to do more.
So this will be a part one and a part two, because you have no idea, audience, what's coming your way from this woman. She has created something so helpful, so useful. You'll be able to find this gift in the show notes of part one, but you're going to want to stay and listen to the explanation. She has an ultimate signature presentation blueprint that she's offering. She has coaching like you've never believed. As you can tell already, she's riveting. She's delightful. She's enjoyable. I must have another 50 questions to ask her that we just need more time. I've never done this before, but we're going to do it this time. There's a first for everything. And I can't wait. She's a sister. I feel that way. So I'll let this live today where it is. I hate it being in the middle of, wait, we have so much more to talk about. You're going to want to tune into part two, because we're going to get into the mechanics, the strategy, the gifts, the opportunities, the benefits that are there for you with public speaking. And this is the girl to give it to you. She has it. She is a woman of integrity and goals in the heavens. She's just magnificent. And you're going to love this. So thank you for being here, Marianne. Really.
Kelly, thank you for providing a platform. Thank you for sharing the people that you find in the world. I think of it as the honeybee. When the honeybee goes out and finds something good, it shares it with the rest of the hive. And that's what you're doing. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
This is wicked. Everybody, before you get a chance to see part two, you want to check out the Marianne Hickman Show. It's on all the major platforms. It's just packed with bold, practical, really honest, brutally honest guidance for speakers and coaches and entrepreneurs who want to get paid and get heard. Want to be heard and get paid. These are both good things when they come together. That's magical. And she's really living proof when you master your message and you own the mic. You are able to bring your gifts to the world in such a significant way. And it's okay that it brings it to your wallet as well. Your coffers can be filled when you're filling other people's. And she lives by that. That's who she is. So that's why she's on the spotlight. We're here to show you how public speaking isn't just part of the business. It can be the business. If you use it, it'll change your reach and your revenue and your reputation. So with that said, thank you again for being here, Marianne. And to all of you who've joined us, I'm thrilled. And as always, and most specifically with Marianne, I really look forward to our next conversation. We'll see you next time.
I do too. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight. We hope you enjoyed this deep dive once again into the remarkable stories and insights of our incredible guests. Their experiences and hard-earned, time-tested wisdom are not just meant to inspire you, but to provide you with actionable steps to take on your own path to success. Remember, you have a story to tell. And your voice has the power to transform your business and make lasting impact. And that's what it's all about. If you found value in today's episode, let us know. And I hope you'll take a moment and subscribe to The Spotlight wherever you listen to your podcasts so you never miss a thought-provoking or idea-producing conversation. I'm Kelly O'Hara, and I can't wait to see you back here for the next episode of the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight.